Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the, we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Out front next, Trump for the second time in less than 24 hours casting doubt on the election results and not committing to a peaceful transfer of power. Will he try to use the military? The chairman of the House Armed Services Committee says yes, and he is out front. Plus, the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, extending the curfew tonight. Protesters gathering at this hour. Calls growing for the attorney general to release the evidence in the Breonna Taylor case that he says exonerated those police. The woman behind the hashtag Say Her Name is out front. And the CDC tonight projecting up to 23,000 more coronavirus deaths in the next 3 weeks. This as one of Trump's top health officials says politics will play no role when it comes to a vaccine. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, an assault on America's democracy. For the second time in 24 hours, the president of the United States casting doubt on whether he will accept the results of the election.
Mr. President, are the election results only legitimate if you win?
So we have to be very careful with the ballots. The ballots, that's a whole big scam. We want to make sure the election is honest, and I'm not sure that it can be. I don't know that it can be with this whole situation. Unsolicited ballots. They're unsolicited, millions being sent to everybody.
All right, this fear-mongering comes after President Trump refused to commit to a peaceful transfer of power if he loses to Joe Biden. And his press secretary today, Kayleigh McEnany, did nothing. Nothing to clarify these alarming comments.
Are the results legitimate only if the president wins?
The president will accept the results of a free and fair election. He will accept the will of the American people.
So for clarity, if he loses and it's free and fair, he will accept.
I've answered your question. He will accept the results of a free and fair election.
Free and fair, according to whom? Well, in this case, according to Donald J. Trump, who, if you actually look at his record, has already said the answer to the question. He has clearly said that the election is not free and fair if he is not the victor.
The only way we're going to lose this election is if the election is rigged. Remember that.
It'll end up being a rigged election.
The Democrats are trying to rig this election because it's the only way they're going to win.
Okay, so he's saying there's no way he can lose unless the election is rigged. So Kayleigh McEnany's point is farcical, right? If he'll accept the results of a free and fair election. He's already made that clear. He said he won't accept them unless he wins. But what will he do, you know, if he loses? Well, let's go and check the tape.
Will you commit here today for a peaceful transferal of power after the election? There has been rioting in Louisville. There's been rioting in many cities across this country, red and your so-called red and blue states. Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transfer of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer of power?
We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
Are you suggesting that you might not accept the results of the election?
I have to see.
I mean, again, get rid of the ballots and you'll have a peaceful. There won't be a transfer, right? Again, if he wins, he accepts it. And to those out there, and I'm sure there are plenty of you who say, come on, don't take him literally on this. He's just stoking the flames. Well, if that's you, or if you are Republican Senator Mike Braun of Indiana, who today told Politico, quote, Trump stokes the fire sometimes. If you took it seriously, it would be alarming. And I don't think that's the case. Well, Senator Braun, Just listen to Trump supporters who are right now at his rally in Jacksonville, Florida. They are taking Trump seriously. Here are two. Arbor Sanchez just went, for the purposes of what we're laying out here, to ask them, what do they think? Here is what they told him.
Do you think that if we get to election night or in the following days, if Biden winds up somehow becoming the winner, do you think it's rigged?
Oh, yes. Very much so.
What are the chances, do you think, that this election might be rigged?
I'll tell you, with the mail-in ballots we don't like, I'll tell you, there's a lot of cheating that's been exposed, especially over the last 4 or 5 years. See, our president brought this to our attention. See, this stuff was going on that nobody really knew about, and it just happened and happened and happened.
Election night,
yes.
Days after, if it shows up that Joe Biden won,
yes.
In your opinion, would that be the only way that Trump could lose, that it'd be a rigged election? Is that the only way Joe Biden can win?
Absolutely. I agree with that. Because there's no way in heck our president's going to lose. But yes, it would be a rigged election. There was some type of cheating went on, what have you. And I firmly believe that.
I wanted to play that whole exchange because that last gentleman there says the president brought all of this to his attention. Yes, they take the president seriously. They believe him. They think if he loses, it's rigged. So I guess I just have to be clear again that there is no evidence now of fraud, of rigging, none. And by the way, I guess one of the best people to listen to on that might be President Trump's own FBI director, Chris Wray. He spoke about it today. Here's what he said.
Americans must have confidence in our voting system and our election infrastructure. And now, we have not seen historically any kind of coordinated national voter fraud effort in a major election, whether it's by mail or otherwise.
And yet Trump's ardent supporters listen to him. And yes, they take him seriously. So yes, Senator Braun, it is alarming. Caitlin Collins is out front live outside the White House. And Caitlin, the president is making sure his supporters question mail-in ballots. And you just heard two of them there that believe that if Biden wins, it's rigged.
Yeah, and that's part of a months-long effort by the president, Aaron, to sow doubt about the outcome of the election. So what he said yesterday was provocative, and he repeated it, of course, again today, as you noted. But it is not new. It is part of this pattern of the president eventually working his way up to this comment where he will not commit to a peaceful transition of power if it comes to that. And today he was saying the reason he won't is because he's not sure that the results of the election can be legitimate and can be honest, was the word he used when he was asked, you know, would you actually accept the results of the election if it's determined to be legitimate? That is not repeating what his press secretary told reporters earlier today. As you showed, she said that if it's a free and fair election, the president will accept the results. That's not what he said when he was pressed by reporters for a second time today on his comments from yesterday. So, of course, it is calling into question what does the president view as a free and fair election? And we know that in the past he said if Joe Biden wins, it means the election was rigged. So he is setting himself up for this showdown that clearly, as you saw play out on Capitol Hill today, Republicans don't want to deal with, because you saw them criticizing what the president had said without naming him. And the Senate went so far as to pass a resolution reaffirming their commitment to a peaceful transition of power because the Constitution mandates it. Now, this comes on a day when we had this unusual announcement from the Justice Department saying that they had found, as part of this investigation, 9 discarded ballots, which they now say 7 which were marked for President Trump, 2 they do not know who they were for because those ballots are sealed, saying they were discarded. It's not really clear where they were discarded, Aaron, but we should note the Justice Department had to correct their statement because after they initially issued it, it said 9 more ballots were for Trump, and then they said, actually, we only know that 7 were for him, 2 we don't know. Reminder, this is all in Pennsylvania. 6 million people voted in Pennsylvania in 2016, but it is notable that the Justice Department is going so far to put some statement out like this on their investigation, even though it was only 9 ballots.
All right. Caitlin, thank you very much. I want to go now to the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Democratic Congressman Adam Smith. And I appreciate your time, Chairman. So, you know, you hear what the president says. Caitlin McEnany says he'll accept a free and fair election. Well, he's laid it out extremely clearly, right, that it is rigged if he is not the victor, therefore not free and fair. What do you think he'll actually do if he loses the election?
Well, I think, I can't imagine him conceding. I mean, this is a person who, you know, basically is a narcissist. So everything he says, everything he does is perfect, as we've heard. He's not wrong about anything. He never makes a mistake. So he certainly could never stand up in front of the American people and say, I lost. So he won't say that. Now, that isn't the important part. The important part is, what does his campaign do and what does his supporters do?
Yes.
They will, you know, they will challenge ballots. And look, in a close election, we had an election in the state of Washington in 2004 where our governor won by 170 votes, I think. And so they're counting every ballot and looking at every ballot very yes. closely. In those close elections, it's difficult. I don't think this election is going to be close, but I think the president is still going to make up whatever number he has to make up and claim it was rigged. And I think that that really undermines our country.
So when he doesn't concede, what does that look like then to you?
Yeah. Well, what the president does or does not say is irrelevant. The states certify the election. And if the states do what I fully expect them to do, which is to certify the election and the results show that Joe Biden has won, then the president loses. And, you know, he can challenge a ballot. He can go in a bunch of different places. The courts are highly unlikely to agree with that, highly unlikely to just on a whim say, well, yeah, OK, we're going to buy into your imaginary voter fraud argument. And by the way, the state of Washington has been voting by all mail-in ballots and automatically sending ballots to every registered voter for, I think, at least 10 years now.
Yes.
And it works perfectly. So, you know, what he says or doesn't say doesn't matter. It's what do the state election board certify?
And it's also that it's what his supporters do. You just heard two of them,
yeah.
right? They believe him. This whole conversation he's put out there, they believe it. Right?
Yes.
They are taking it seriously. You know, Senator Braun, I hope, heard that because he said, well, if they take it seriously, basically, then it would be alarming. Well, that's alarming. So then what happens, though, if they don't buy that, if they believe it's rigged and he's saying it's rigged, then what? The states tell him to go and he just goes? You think it's just going to it just resolves
yeah.
itself?
Well, there's a couple of layers of concern. Number one, what do his supporters do? And look, I mean, there were people who, you know, were complaining that Barack Obama was not legitimately elected president, but they mm-hmm. didn't really do anything about it. But the alarming thing is the degree to which the president is actively supporting militias. We saw, you know, the vigilantes in Wisconsin who actually killed two people, and the president expressed support for them. What happens with these armed militias and vigilantes? You know, do they take matters into their own hands? I think we're going to have to work very hard to calm that. And then there is the mechanisms of government. You know, and I have spoken to our defense leaders about this issue. And
you have, to the military leaders.
Yes, there's two very important points. I mean, first of all, they say we serve one president at a time. So no matter what, you know, President Trump is going to be president until January 20th.
Yes.
There's all a manner of mischief he can do between here and there. He can't just unilaterally overturn the election. So come January 20th, he's out. And all of the layers of government will no longer serve him. They will serve Joe Biden if he wins and if he's sworn in. And there's nothing he can do about that but complain about it. Now, the second thing is, does he try to order the military to defy that?
Right.
And what the military has made clear to me is they will not follow an unlawful order, period. For instance, if the president had ordered them into a city, as he was threatening to do, they were prepared to say, no, that is not a lawful order. We have no lawful reason to go there. And their oath is to the Constitution. Much to Donald Trump's chagrin, it is not to him. It is to the laws and the Constitution of our country, and they will uphold that oath.
All right. Chairman, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate the chance.
And out front now, Lawrence Douglas, author of Will He Go? Trump and the Looming Election Meltdown in 2020. Also a professor of law at Amherst. Amherst. Oh, okay. Williams. And Laura Coates, former federal prosecutor. Thank you both very much. Lawrence, so the title of your book says it all, Will He Go? Trump and the Looming Election Meltdown in 2020. What do you see happening here if the president refuses to concede?
Well, what I worry about is that we need to connect two points. Back when Trump issued this tweet, raising the possibility of delaying the election, a lot of people focused on that. They observed that that's kind of a preposterous notion. The president can't delay the election.
Yeah.
But on that very same day, he issued another tweet that got very little attention. And he tweeted the following. He said, must know election results on the night of the election
yeah.
and not months or even years later. And I think if we connect that point with his relentless attacks on the integrity of mail-in ballots, these kind of baseless attacks, we have to worry that what he's trying to do is trying to take whatever lead he might enjoy on November 3rd itself. And I do think, again, it's possible that he would have a lead on November 3rd because of the millions of mail-in ballots yet to be counted. And he would try to then leverage that lead into a claim that he's been reelected. And then in the subsequent days, as that lead vanishes, as these mail-in ballots become counted, well, then he says, this is simply everything coming true that he has predicted. That is that the mail-in ballots are going to be contaminated by fraud. And again, we have to go with the November 3rd results. And that's what I think is the deeper and disturbing politics behind some of his most recent claims.
Well, that is deeply disturbing, right? Because that's going to sow doubt, right? The numbers start to change. Your scenario is alarming, but makes a lot of sense. And Laura, to the point that Lawrence is making, the president's key focus right now is on mail-in ballots, right? And we all know that those ballots, at least at this point, are likely largely going to be cast by Biden voters, right? They are the ones who say they're going to vote by mail. Democrats overwhelmingly so, Republicans overwhelmingly in person on Election Day. And the president has been saying this is a scam over and over. Here he is.
Do you know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster. Ballots are missing. There's fraud.
When you see them cheating with those ballots,
there's going to be fraud. It's a disaster.
And Laura, his supporters, we just heard a couple of them, and one of them, I wanted to play that full exchange so everyone could hear it. They believe him. This is not a they take him, you know, they get the joke. They believe this.
They, in fact, are complicit if they believe it, right? The idea that our integrity or the democracy is in jeopardy if people exercise the right to vote in a way that many of our military members and our overseas citizens have done, and many states across this country have done so, and particularly at a time when we have the pandemic looming overhead, making people have to make the decision between voting in person or potentially being proactive about voting early if it's available in their states. This is also part of his general plan when it comes to replacing a Supreme Court justice, because as Lawrence was talking about, he anticipates perhaps there being some discrepancy between the election night count and later on. And I believe he's hoping, and he hasn't been very quiet about this, that he will have 9 justices seated to duplicate what he interprets as what happens in Bush v. Gore. But of course, that was not about whether mailed-in ballots were valid. It wasn't about whether ballots had yet to be counted. It was about recount. So he misconstrues what that's all about. But it's all part of a general plan of a self-fulfilling prophecy that, frankly, the DOJ, as a former voting rights attorney for the DOJ, we have never seen this level that he claims to have about fraud. It's just not present.
No, and Christopher Wray, Trump's own picked FBI director, made it very clear, right? And you're going to have some instances of maybe some fraud, maybe some mistakes, right? That Pennsylvania case with things getting thrown away, who knows what that is. But they're investigating each one of those, right? They're very small instances. Wray made it very clear. No mass fraud ever in history in a presidential or other election. And Lawrence, the Pennsylvania Republican Party is now pushing back against a report from The Atlantic. And it basically said the GOP-run legislature there is trying to strategize already how to overturn the statewide results if Trump is the loser in Pennsylvania. So the scenario is if Biden is certified as the winner, Democratic governor approves that, right? And you get the Biden slate of electors. But The Atlantic says the GOP lawmakers are looking at all kinds of ways to declare the results tainted to get Trump electors, to basically flip the election. That sends the whole thing then to Congress, actually. This is not the Supreme Court. This then goes to Congress. So explain what happens then, Professor.
So again, the scenario would be, it's kind of like a repeat of what happened in 1876, back in this famous Hills-Tilden catastrophic election, in which you could have these swing states, such as Pennsylvania, submitting conflicting electoral certificates to Congress. That is, it's possible, particularly if the election turns on relatively narrow outcomes of late-counted mail-in ballots. You could imagine, again, that, let's say, a Republican-controlled legislature in Pennsylvania recognizes that Trump has won and that the Democratic governor insists, no, of course, Biden has carried the state. And so you now have these conflicting certificates that are submitted to Congress, and it is Congress on January 6th, 2021, which will actually open the electoral certificates in a joint session. It's meant to be a relatively ceremonial function in which they count up the electoral votes and declare a winner. But if, as in 1876, if you have these conflicting certificates, and if you have a divided Congress, as it is now, with a Republican-controlled Senate and a Democratic-controlled House, then basically you have a stalemate. Then you basically have Congress unable to decide who has won the election. And then we're really in a world of hurt.
Wow. All right. It was the fascinating scenarios and incredible that we are in a position here where some of these may literally be on the table. We are now looking at states where you have the governor and the legislature split. Thank you both very much. And next, protesters gathering across the country at this hour over the Breonna Taylor case. These are live pictures. This is Louisville, Kentucky, and we're going to go there in just a moment. Plus, the FBI director disputing Trump's claims that foreign nations are also a part of this and committing large-scale voter fraud.
That kind of fraud at scale would be a major challenge for an adversary.
And the president booed and jeered while paying his respects to the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The breaking news, protests growing in Louisville. That is what you're looking at right now. The mayor has now extended the city's curfew all the way through the weekend. Protesters are continuing to express anger over the lack of charges in the police killing of Breonna Taylor. It comes as officials say the two officers that were shot during protests last night are expected to recover. Shimon Procupes is out front from Louisville. And Shimon, as obviously here we are, you got a curfew. You have dusk coming. What's the latest?
Yeah, so Aaron, I just want to take you to the scene here behind me. We were walking with these marchers. We were walking along with them. They were coming to this area. I'm going to step out of the camera here because they found out that there were what appeared to be militia members who were parking here, staying. This is a hotel parking lot, and there was a confrontation between the protesters and these members. They don't appear to be law enforcement, but they are wearing, as you can see, military fatigue. They have long guns. All of them are carrying these long guns. They're wearing bulletproof vests. The protesters said that they were coming here to confront them, and when they got here, they got into a confrontation. Obviously, we've been standing back because of the volatile situation here and out of concern for our safety. But things have now, as you can see, they're now leaving. The protesters are leaving. Some of the people who were standing here behind this fence were telling the protesters to leave, to walk away, because there was concern. It's a lot of gun power behind us, and there was concern that perhaps someone would use one of those weapons. Of course, Kentucky is an open carry state, so you have the militia members who have weapons here, and now you have also protesters here who are carrying their own weapons. But certainly it seems like, at least for now, things have quieted down here, Erin.
All right. Shimon, thank you very much. And I want to go now to the former Secretary of Homeland Security under President George W. Bush, Michael Chertoff. And Secretary, I want to actually talk to you a lot about what we're seeing here with the election. But just because of what we just saw there in that live shot from Louisville, I just wanted to give a chance for you to give some perspective here. You have these sort of tinderbox situations going on now in various places across this country where you have protesters there, you had militia with long guns. How concerned are you that a spark goes off here that could become much more serious?
Well, I'm very concerned that you could have an outbreak of gun violence. And we've seen a little bit of that in the past. I think it would be wise, and I think they're doing this, for the protesters who are focused on the Taylor case in Kentucky to step back and avoid a direct confrontation. Otherwise, someone is going to get badly hurt. And as far as the police are concerned, having a curfew and keeping the two sides separate, I think is a very, very important part of their mission.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like you see moments like those and you just realize how, look, on how edge these situations are and how much on edge this country is. And part of the reason this country is on edge also, Secretary, comes from what we're seeing about the election, right? And the FBI director today, Christopher Wray, again at odds with the president, right? At first he said, very clear that there's been no large-scale fraud in voting in this country, continued to then say foreign adversaries, talking about foreign adversaries committing large-scale fraud in the presidential election, again, on a different page from the president. Here is the director.
Certainly to change a federal election outcome by mounting that kind of fraud at scale would be a major challenge for an adversary.
Right, he's talking about, you know, whether Russia or someone else, right, would be able to commit large-scale voter fraud on mail-in ballots. He's saying he doesn't see that is a legitimate thing. The president, though, of course, says again and again. Here's what he said.
Will they be counterfeited by groups inside our nation? Will they be counterfeited maybe by the millions, by foreign powers who don't want to see Trump win?
So the FBI director is saying large-scale intervention in mail-in ballots from a foreign adversary doesn't make sense. The president is saying maybe by the millions counterfeit ballots run by a foreign adversary. Does it disturb you to hear the president and his FBI director saying such polar opposite things?
Well, Director Ray is exactly correct. It would be impossible, essentially, at scale to alter mail-in ballots. You'd have to have millions of people grabbing ballots out of mailboxes and changing them.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. And in fact, you just heard they're investigating 9 ballots that were somehow disposed of. That's trivial in terms of the total number. What foreign powers will do is try to do exactly what President Trump has done, create doubt, skepticism, and even cynicism about the outcome of the election. Because the game plan for Russia and other adversary powers is to shake American confidence in the result and put us into a state of disarray and disorder. And so when the president says, well, we shouldn't count the ballots, we'll just have continuity and I'll continue, that's exactly music to Putin's ears. And that's the kind of message the Russians and other foreign powers are going to be amplifying going forward in this election.
So again, this is where we see this alarming difference, right? Director Ray saying what you're saying, right? No widespread voter fraud, and very clear that Americans should have confidence in the system. Here's the FBI director today.
Americans must have confidence in our voting system and our election infrastructure. And now we have not seen historically, any kind of coordinated national voter fraud effort in a major election, whether it's by mail or otherwise.
Okay, so that comports with what you're saying and it comports with the facts. But here's the president, and by the way, also his attorney general, saying the opposite.
You could be talking about large percentages of these ballots are going to be missing. There's going to be fraud. It's a disaster.
But elections that have been held with mail have found substantial fraud and coercion.
So that doesn't comport with the facts. I don't know if you heard a few moments ago, Secretary, we actually spoke to a couple of voters at the Jacksonville rally the president's having tonight. They believe what the president has said, that if he loses, the whole thing was rigged, that it was fraudulent. How worried are you about this?
Well, I think it's outrageous that we have the president and the attorney general simply making up nonsense about the validity of our elections. And even common sense tells you that you can't alter the election results at scale. What I worry about is this is an effort to lay the groundwork for two things. One, to discourage people from voting because they figure what's the point. And second, to create an atmosphere of resistance to the outcome if, as I think he probably believes, Trump loses the election to Joe Biden. And so we have to be very careful to make sure that we reinforce the message that there is no even remotely realistic possibility of large-scale tampering, that this is in the hands of state election officials, it would be impossible to suborn them all in 50 states, and that this is really just like what a magician does. You know, look over here while I perform my magic trick. It's performative, but it's not actually honest and realistic.
All right, Secretary Chertoff, I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Thank you.
And next, an alarming new projection from the CDC. 23,000 more Americans could die from coronavirus in the next 3 weeks. So what is the president doing about it? Well, possibly something, holding a rally with few masks and no social distancing. And we're watching the live pictures out of Louisville, Kentucky. Protesters moments ago facing off with apparent militia members. The curfew is set to take effect there in Louisville shortly. We'll go back on the ground in a moment. You're looking at live pictures there on the screen. That's President Trump. He is in Jacksonville, Florida right now, holding a campaign rally. You can see no social distancing. And we can tell you from what our reporters see, there are few masks in the crowd, except for the people you see who are right behind him, who presumably know that they would be on camera because of their position. This, as the CDC projects up to 226,000 coronavirus deaths in the United States by October 17th. So the math on that means 23,000 more people will die in the next 23 days. That means this average of 1,000 Americans dying a day continues unabated. Boris Sanchez is out front. He is in Jacksonville. Boris, the pandemic and the enormous loss of life, not something that you've heard anything about from the president tonight.
That's right, Aaron. Politics taking precedent tonight for President Trump. This crowd, enormous, very large. As you noted, very few masks in sight. And the Trump campaign really giving up on any semblance of following CDC guidelines coming from people appointed by this president. I'm going to step out of the way quickly so you can get a full appreciation for the size of this crowd. We're going to pan over. It is huge. People have been waiting outside for hours in line. Again, not wearing masks, shoulder to shoulder. There's an immense crowd here wrapping around the hangar. There's still an immense crowd outside that tried to get in but couldn't. They're watching the president's speech on large screens. Something really important that you don't see in the camera is that a very sizable portion of this crowd are older folks. They're senior citizens. They're people who are most susceptible to coronavirus. And many of them, by virtue of standing out in the Florida heat for hours, become ill. In fact, within the last hour, a woman who was standing not far from us, not wearing a mask, became so sick that she threw up on the ground. She had to be escorted out of here. She's not alone. A lot of people get ill at these rallies. Notably, Duval County, where we are, has had nearly 30,000 coronavirus cases. Not many when you compare it to other parts of Florida that have been hit harder, but I've spoken to several people who have driven hours and hours to be here. It is not a situation that is comfortable or really safe to be in, Aaron.
All right, Boris, thank you very much. You know, and as Boris says, they really have given up on any semblance of pretending to follow the CDC guidelines. The rally where Boris is actually taking place just hours after Trump's own HHS secretary said that people should avoid settings where wearing masks and social distancing is not possible. And, of course, the president is now in exactly such a setting created by himself. Nick Watt is out front.
I want to reassure you and the American people, politics will play no role whatsoever in the approval of a vaccine.
Same interview, Secretary Azar falsely assured us the president has always promoted masks.
The president has been clear since his April guidance.
And offered unflinching praise for the president.
Thanks to President Trump, we're in such a better place than we were 5-6 months ago.
Last night, President Trump said this about possible strengthening of FDA criteria for a vaccine.
Are you okay with that?
Well, I tell you what, we're looking at that. That has to be approved by the White House. We may or may not approve it.
Apparently, the FDA or HHS would normally sign off.
Under normal circumstances, that decision is theirs. The secretary approves it, and that's it. Something that comes from without, that is not a scientific consideration, would be troublesome.
Meanwhile, in our actual life and death fight against this virus,
we've squandered our summer. We went into the summer with 20,000 new cases a day, and we're now at double that.
Yesterday, more than 1,000 lives lost to COVID for the first time in over a week. And average new case counts are rising in 21 states. Look at that huge red chunk of the country.
As you look at that map, what you're seeing is an inconvenient truth, which is that many states allowed schools and colleges to reopen when they had not gotten their disease under control.
CDC data shows this summer people in their 20s accounted for more than 20% of infections.
Right now, the infections in the country are driven more by young people, 19 to 25.
And the virus appears to be mutating to become more transmissible, but mercifully not more deadly, according to one new preprint study.
Now, today, the governors of New York and Michigan have called for a congressional oversight investigation into the Trump administration's politicization of the response to this pandemic. They say that the scale of this tragedy is the direct result of President Trump and the federal government's deceit, political self-dealing, and incompetence. Erin?
All right, Nick, thank you very much. And I want to go to Dr. William Schaffner. He is a liaison to the CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, also former Epidemic Intelligence Service Officer at the CDC. So, Dr. Schaffner, when you hear what Nick just said there, what he concluded with, right, about concern about deceit, politicization, Secretary Azar, that politics will play no role in the approval of a vaccine. Are you worried about this?
Oh, for sure, Erin. Of course I'm worried. Both the reputation of the FDA and the CDC, unfortunately, have been tainted because of political interference. And even just this recent FDA wishing to change the ground rules for the development of the vaccine has to go to the White House for approval. That's totally inappropriate. It's never happened before, should not happen. That's evidence of political interference with a basic scientific process.
And I just want people to understand the possibility of just the potential of what damage is happening here, right? It's not just the damage to these institutions, which is serious and perhaps going to happen for a long time. It's the vaccine itself and whether Americans will take it. So in the spring, 72% of Americans said they would probably get a vaccine if available. Now it's only 51. That is a plunge. And that means, and by the way, if only 51% of people get it, you're not even going to get to any traditional definition of herd immunity. It wouldn't even work. How big of a problem is growing skepticism?
Oh, it's enormous, because once we do develop a vaccine, obviously we want people to accept it. But there's a lot of skepticism, as you demonstrate, in the general population. But what's not represented is the skepticism and the concern in the medical profession. They're very concerned. I hear that almost literally every single day. So if physicians won't recommend it once it comes out, when they recommend caution, that will just hamper the vaccination program.
And which is incredible when you say physicians are worried about it, because they're worried about the process. And now there's this whole other layer to this. You know, we're talking about the politicization of the FDA and the process and the White House and the influence. But now you have the Democratic governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, saying that he's going to have his state conduct its own review of a potential coronavirus vaccine, which I just want to make very clear here is completely unprecedented outside the norm of how these things are done. It is just not done that way. But here's what he said.
Frankly, I'm not going to trust the federal government's opinion. And I wouldn't recommend to New Yorkers based on the federal government's opinion.
Is that helpful, or does that make this whole thing worse?
Oh, my gosh. Not trusting the federal government's opinion about the validity, the rigor of a vaccine? Oh, what have we fallen to? Erin, that's just painful. Terrible.
Dr. Schaffner, I appreciate your time. A sobering conversation here looking at these numbers. Thank you. And next, Kentucky's governor joining the calls tonight for the state's attorney general to release evidence in the Breonna Taylor case. The woman behind the campaign that has now taken hold around the world, the hashtag Say Her Name is out front next. And then something Trump does not hear often. But jeers were audible as he paid respects to Justice Ginsburg today. All right, breaking news. Protests in Louisville continuing to grow. We showed you pictures earlier of what our Shimon Procubez said appeared to be armed vigilantes facing off with protesters. This is the second night of protests following the announcement that no officers will be directly charged with the killing of Breonna Taylor. I want to go back to Shimon in Louisville. And Shimon, what are you seeing now, obviously, as it gets dark?
Yeah, so we were in that area when I was just on a short time ago, where there was a confrontation between the protesters and those men. A lot of guns there. Of course, it was a very volatile situation. Things calmed down. And now most of the protests have come back here to Jefferson Square. Of course, we're just over an hour away from curfew. The police at around 9 o'clock have been indicating they are going to strictly enforce the curfew. So if a lot of these people are still here at 9 o'clock, the police are going to move in and tell them to leave and then possibly make arrests. They make these announcements and then the police move in and make the arrests. And for now, everyone is just gathered here. People are chanting and they are marching around. Things for now here, from what we saw just a few minutes ago, much more peaceful as the protesters continue to gather here in the square.
All right, Shimon, thank you very much. We're going to continue watching these pictures. And I want to go out front now, as we do, to Kimberly Crenshaw, founder of the hashtag Say Her Name, also executive director of the African American Policy Forum. And I appreciate your time, Kimberly. So Breonna Taylor's mother posted this portrait of her daughter on Instagram. The message was, "It's still Breonna Taylor for me," along with the hashtag, "The system failed Breonna." And an attorney for Breonna's family tells us they were notified about the grand jury's decision, right, to not directly charge any officer with her death only 2 minutes before it was announced. Only 2 minutes before it was announced. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me, frankly, that despite the fact that this is the one case where a Black woman's loss of life to police violence has galvanized millions of people, not just around the nation, but around the world, can still lead to a moment in which the system tells us that at the end of the day, no moral or legal wrong has been done to her. This is one of the continuing, longstanding dimensions of being a Black woman in this society. You're not safe anywhere, not even safe in your own home. So what we're looking at now is the fact that even though this most egregious loss of an innocent life happened, there's no allegation that she did anything to deserve this, that at the end of the day, this system could come to the conclusion that no harm, no legal harm, no moral harm has happened. So, you know, this is what Say Her Name was designed to draw attention to. And hopefully people can see that the problem is much deeper than a few bad apples.
And you know, you have pointed this out, you know, that as there had been, as attention started to focus a spotlight on violence, that it focused on Black men and not on Black women. And you founded the hashtag Say Her Name, right? Which now, of course, is ubiquitous. We have seen that slogan on shirts and signs. WNBA dedicated the entire season to that, painted on a street in Louisville. And it's about more, obviously, than Breonna Taylor, right? It's about Black women, many other Black women who have been victims of police violence. LeBron James last night tweeting, "The most disrespected person on earth is the Black woman. I promise you I'll do my best to change this as much as I can, and even more love to you queens all over this country and beyond." So Kimberly, why is this campaign so important? And do you believe that the staying power here will continue past what we're seeing now on the streets with Breonna Taylor?
Well, that's certainly, you know, what we hope. We've been laboring under this demand since 2014. When Fran Garrett brought her daughter's coffin, Michelle Cousseau, to the Phoenix City Hall 5 days after Mike Brown was killed, to draw attention to the fact that Black women are still killed by the police. The statement that LeBron James tweeted last night was a statement that's 60 years old. It was something that Malcolm X said. So we're still in a period of time where we have to make people see that Black women are also the subject of anti-Black police violence. It's one of the most consistent aspects of our experience across history. The problem, though, is that to really understand this and to see it, you have to be able to talk about race and racism. You have to know about the history. This is what many of us have been laboring for decades to talk about. Those of us who do critical race theory, the 1619 Project, which is a new articulation of it, whiteness studies, implicit bias. And this president is telling us that we can't even talk about these things. So not only is this one of the most significant ways that America is failing its promises, but now we're told to even talk about these failed promises is anti-American.
And so let me ask you one question, because you want to have this conversation, and this is the conversation we need to have. And yet
Then there are things that happen that derail the conversation, right? Awful things that happen, right? Like violence or rioting. And we have seen that. The civil rights activist, Reverend Jesse Jackson, spoke about it, issuing a warning to the protesters who were out there peacefully. Take a listen.
Must be smart enough not to turn our anguish and anger into self-destruction. Just drop a commercial.
Are you worried about that? That this violence and looting that is a part of some of this?
Of course I'm worried, but most importantly, and I'm worried about the fact that the responsibility for the violence is too often framed as the product of Black Lives Matter and not what we know, which is some of this violence, perhaps even the majority of it, is coming from the other side of the spectrum, people who are trying to turn this unfortunate moment into, frankly, a civil war. And we need to talk more about those who are creating the crisis out of this moment.
All right. Well, I really appreciate talking to you again, Kimberly. Thank you so much. And also new tonight, President Trump loudly booed today as he paid his respects to Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg at the Supreme Court. The president will announce his nominee to replace Ginsburg on Saturday. One Republican to watch as the fight over the nomination heats up will be Senator Susan Collins of Maine. She is now facing her toughest re-election yet. Gary Tuchman is out front.
Susan Collins has been a U.S. senator for almost a quarter century. The Republican senior senator from Maine bills herself as the Senate's most bipartisan member, a reputation that has helped her win re-election in a state where there are more Democrats and even more independents than there are Republicans.
There is no one who has worked harder for the people of Maine, all the people of Maine, and delivered more to them than I have.
But one thing she helped deliver is proving politically troublesome for her. Susan Collins helped deliver a Supreme Court seat to Brett Kavanaugh in 2018.
I will vote to confirm Judge Kavanaugh.
Vote, no. She voted to confirm despite sexual assault allegations against Kavanaugh from his high school days.
Hi there.
Collins' Democratic opponent is the Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives.
My name is Sarah Gideon.
At this campaign event in the small town of Raymond, Maine, listen to what this man tells Gideon.
I never would vote for Susan after she voted for Kavanaugh.
In the streets of Maine's largest city, Portland, and in the scenic small towns, Kavanaugh's name comes up a lot.
Ever since the Brett Kavanaugh issue or the Brett Kavanaugh vote, I felt like she's not listening to what the people of Maine want anymore.
How did you feel when Susan Collins voted for Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court?
Like she's not listening to what people actually want.
I'm a Democrat, but I have always voted for Susan Collins until this year. She's just capitulated.
Susan Collins has been a re-election juggernaut. She has won her three Senate re-election bids handily, the last one in 2014 by about 37 percentage points. But this race against Sarah Gideon is a whole different ballgame. The most recent New York Times Siena College poll conducted just before Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died shows Sarah Gideon with 49% and Susan Collins with 44%. The results are within the poll's margin of error. Collins is polling better, though, than President Trump is in this state. For some voters, the Trump factor is too much.
She's just in Trump's pocket. She's scared of him, as so many people are.
We used to vote for Collins, but I think she's too much of a Trumpie right at the moment.
Meanwhile, who will you be voting for in this Senate election?
Susan Collins, definitely.
Among voters who enthusiastically support Senator Collins, a concern they often voice shows the political tightrope she has to walk.
So I think she ought to be more cooperative with President Trump.
This man says Senator Collins should
take more of a conservative stance on issues and vote the conservative position, especially with the upcoming vote on our new incoming Supreme Court justice.
Indeed, Senator Collins announced she would vote against the Trump Supreme Court nominee if the vote takes place before Election Day. Does Gideon give Collins any credit for that type of bipartisanship?
I'm sorry, I cannot say that Susan Collins has stood up for what is right.
During a debate earlier this month.
I have always put the people of Maine first, and I always will.
Completely different opinions, which the people of Maine will have to consider. Gary Tuchman, CNN, Portland, Maine.
A lot of momentous races coming up in November. Thank you for joining us. Anderson starts now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.